Success begins in the 6 inches between your ears. If you want more money, more time, more happiness, and more love in your life, then listen to The Success Show with Chris and Suzanne Stiles every Tuesday night at 7:15.
Well, it's Tuesday and we're back. I almost have a voice. And The Success Show is here with you tonight with another fantastic guest, so we're absolutely delighted. And please, send us an SMS, 41348, if you have any questions for Alon Reyes from Reyes Corp. We're going to be talking to Alon about his journey, his travels, how he ended up in Reyes Corp. Why is he the entrepreneur that he is, and why does he start looking after entrepreneurs, which is, I think, the more important story.
Indeed, and firstly, let's open the show by formally welcoming you. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, the last couple of weeks have really been spent interviewing and dealing with the international guys that come out and attend National Achievers Congress, the Chris Gardeners, the Tom Hopkins, etc., etc. And the thing is, our show is so much more, as you will well know, than just about the guys that come from overseas. And that's why tonight we're absolutely delighted to have in studio with us Alon Reyes of Reyes Corp. Now, for any of you who are interested in entrepreneurship, you will absolutely know this name and you will know the name of this company. They do amazing work. If you go to their website, Reyes Corp, you can learn so much more about them. In fact, we were there today just having a look at some of the information as to what they do, and they certainly do fantastic stuff. The evidence of is there, and that's what I like, and that's why we were very, very excited to have Alon join us in studio tonight, because we're not talking entrepreneurship with someone who's a wannabe. We're talking entrepreneurship tonight with someone who is local, been through this, done that, has all the scars that go with it. And that's what we like about the show, is we like to be able to dig into the meat of topics and deliver meaningful insights, not just a whole bunch of emotional claptrap around stuff where ultimately you're running around with a whole bunch of fog in your head, as opposed to just, you know, making a couple of good connections around what the truth is.
Well, this is wonderful, and I think on the back of NAC South Africa 2014, let's really think about it. We had so many aspiring young entrepreneurs at the event. We gave away more than 125 tickets, and all you ticket holders and ticket winners, if you'd like to share with us some of your experiences, you can email us at success@mixfm.co.za. You can send us a tweet on @mix938fm. Now, Alon, passion for me is entrepreneurship, building business. My particular passion is women in business and empowering women to understand that they can be in business, because I think a lot of women go for the security of the job. And especially if you're a single mom, you like to know that you're getting the paycheck in every month. Just please share with us a bit about yourself, your vision, how it all started.
Sure. It started a long time ago, and it started probably in my teenage years, when I grew up with entrepreneurial parents, and my parents made umbrellas, and oh, wow. I was groomed to take over their business, but let's say things happened, and and I didn't, and I landed up pretty down and out on the streets of Durban, where I'd lost my job, my car, my apartment, and I managed to convince a friend of mine to take me into his business. He had a retail clothing store. I was 23 years old at the time. I was now catching a bus from a sport little rich kid to, you know, taking public transport to work. And within a couple of months, I managed to turn around his business through some very novel promotion, which got me into the newspaper. And on the 18th of April, 1994, the Daily News, the newspaper in Durban, arrived to take a picture of me and write up about this promotion that I did. And on the 19th of April, the article appeared in the newspaper, my first bit of PR. And a few hours into the day, there was a phone call, and it was an unknown person who said he had just read the article and he was sending his driver to pick me up. And about half an hour later, a black BMW with tinted windows arrived. And now I was a little worried because who was in there? so I looked through the window, and there was a little guy inside. So I thought, no, I'm bigger than him. I can get in. And he took me off to a place called Prefco House, up to the fourth floor. And there I sat and waiting for I don't know whom. And this man eventually arrived and asked me a whole bunch of questions. And then eventually, after about half an hour, he said to me, go into any business you like, I'll back you. And I went, sure, bud. Absolutely sure, bud. Crazy guy. And I didn't think anything of it. I got very uncomfortable and asked to be taken back to the shop. My friend John asked me who was that, and I said some nutter, some crazy guy. And 2 weeks later, same man phones back and says, what are you still doing there? And I said, you couldn't be serious. And he said, I'm very serious. And now I had a backer who would back me in any business I liked. But what business do you go into? You know, you're young, you spoke about passion earlier. What was I passionate about? I didn't really know. I was passionate about. I was looking. What was I passionate about? And so now I'm thinking of what business can I go into. And I'm running up and down Durban Beachfront trying to look for inspiration. And there, on Durban Beachfront, was some Nando's rubbish on the ground. Now Nando's are just listed, and many entrepreneurs will identify with this: that you keep looking for signs from God as to like what to do. So I looked at this and said, you know, God must be speaking to me. I mean, what are the chances of, you know, Nando's rubbish on Durban Beachfront? Of course, there's a huge chance. But not ten meters later, there was some Steers rubbish on Durban Beachfront. So Nando's rubbish, Steers rubbish, God's speaking to me. I mean, I have to get into fast food. So let me check if I'm passionate about fast food. Of course I'm passionate about fast food. I love it. Okay. I know where all the fast food operations are around Durban, particularly the ones that are open after 12 that absorb alcohol. And so I'm passionate about fast food. So I come back now. I have to come up with an idea. And eventually I come up with a business called the New York Sausage Factory, the United Tastes of America. And this was a fast food operation aimed at the hot dog industry, which was a mom and pop operation generally, and I was going to develop this franchise. And I went to him and I said to him, this is my idea, the New York Sausage Factory, United Tastes of America, 12 different types of hot dogs. We take a roll and we put a boerewors in and we wrap it in the New York Times, and we put a South African flag and we call that a South African. We take a roll, we put an English banger inside and we put an English flag and we call that an English. We take chorizo and we call that a Portuguese, and so on. So Frankfurter and German, etc., etc. He said, wonderful idea. I like it, but you have to get the idea past Negative Ned. So who's Negative Ned? Negative Ned is the person in every entrepreneur's life who says it can't be done.
Yep.
Sometimes we're married to them. I'm not. I have my wife close by, so I'm not.
And sitting here in studio. Yeah.
But sometimes you're married to them, sometimes they're your parents, sometimes they're your brother and sister, and sometimes they're your friend. And my Negative Ned happened to be an accountant. And why that's important in my life is because I failed accounts twice at Fasti. And so I had a huge regard for anyone who could, you know, balance books. So when this person said to me, you'll never make money, you know, that was a serious thing. He says, this business will never make money. And he was right. I opened my first store on the 22nd of October that year, and I did 580 rand and 20 cents turnover. And the reason why I remember that is because it is the most amount of money I ever made in that business. And all I could hear was a Negative Ned saying, I told you so, I told you so. When I went to bed, there he was speaking. When I woke up, brushed my teeth, there he was. Mm. Anyway, so I set up this business, and it's a failure. And it's a massive, massive failure. And so I learned the most incredible part of my journey. Because I started looking for excuses as to why it failed. Was it the fact that I didn't have a private education? No, I did. Is the fact that I didn't have a tertiary education? I did. Was it I didn't have money? I did. I didn't have a mentor? I did. I had absolutely no excuse, no place to hide, no rock to hide under. It was me. And that was the best lesson you could ever learn as an entrepreneur, that you You are responsible for your own success or failure. It's got nothing to do with anyone else. You don't own that. So off I go to pluck up the courage to go to my mentor now to explain to him that I have failed. I even tried to grow a beard because I thought that was quite dramatic, and I even failed at that. I couldn't get that right. And I walked into his office and I said to him, I have failed. And I said, and quite dramatically, and if it takes me the rest of my life, I'll pay you back. And I started getting up and he said, sit down. Oh my gosh. Okay, I sat down. He said, did I back you or did I back the business? So I said, you backed me. So he said, well, if you get up now and you walk out, then you failed. But right up until this point, the business has failed. What would you do differently? So I told him I changed the menu, the venue, the pricing, etc. And he said, now go out and do that again, but this time take all the lessons. And the second time I did it, I got it right. And that was the beginning of my journey.
Well, that's wonderful, because I think that's one of the things that most entrepreneurs don't do, is just take a few minutes and learn the lesson. Because those lessons, failure is the greatest teacher. Success is not a very good one at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because in success, you just think, I'm so good at this,
mm-hmm.
I can't fail.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I think that's incredible, because we find so many times that we say to people, what was the upside of everything you've just experienced?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we can speak from experience. I had my one and only ever entrepreneurial catastrophic failure a few years ago and lost everything. 7 million rand cash, my house, my jewelry, my paintings, all the wonderful things. And with every best intention, that project was launched.
Mm-hmm.
It was done. And I've got a great reputation in the media industry. I could have gone back instantly. I could have walked in anywhere or started my own business in media again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of the people are still waiting to see if I'm going to come back. And the answer is absolutely not. Because I learned so much. I mean, it was the best self-investment of everything that I've ever learned. Because I sat down and thought, why was I doing this? Was I passionate about what I was doing? Or was I passionate about what it could do?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer was, really, is that if I'd have been successful in that project with Chris, we'd have just been bringing out Chris Dodner, Les Brown, all these guys, and not actually honing our skills as South African entrepreneurs. And I do count myself a South African. I came here when I was 15. I've spent all of my adult life here. I absolutely adore South Africa, and my passion is South African and African entrepreneurs. So what do? You've got to pick yourself up. So mm-hmm. you go from, okay, I kept the car because mm-hmm. I managed to keep paying for it. But, I mean, that's all that we kept, because you've got to have a car
mm-hmm.
to do business. But we sold everything else. I sold 500,000 rands worth of jewelry and got 10%, 10 cents on the rand for it. But I learned my lessons and we started again. And it's incredible. I mean, you did it much younger. But mm-hmm. it doesn't matter how old you are. That is what you have to do.
It's your gift.
Yeah.
Well, what I loved about the way that you opened is you brought a very sober edge to tonight's interview. And thank you so much for that. And one of the delightful things about having a radio show, gosh, I wonder where my voice has gone. It just disappeared. One of the wonderful things about having a radio show is we get to sit next to people. And the amazing thing, and I love energy. I absolutely just love energy. And you have such a calm energy about you. You have a real presence. That's because you've been there, done that. You've taken the hidings. Now, and then you've created the successes. Now, what is very interesting for me, when you were speaking about your idea, international tastes.
And the New York Sausage Factory, the byline was the United Tastes of America.
There we go.
Yeah.
I loved it. And what I also so enjoyed, it was such a simple idea.
Mm.
It's not like it was shrouded in a whole bunch of complexity. It was just a simple idea that you wanted to get started.
Mm.
Now, one of the things about our show is it attracts the attention of a lot of young people, startup entrepreneurs, wannabes, or they've actually just started a business. And what struck me, two things: the simplicity of your idea, the fact that this chap actually called you on your wanting to leave and come back, which was a very profound thing for him to do, because it means a lot to have someone actually say to you, no matter how hard you've nosedived, I still believe you. And I'm not sure that a lot of people out there have that. So that was massively fortunate in your case.
Correct.
And then also to say it was me. And one of the questions I'd like to pose to you tonight is around entrepreneurship, is that right now entrepreneurship is being made so sexy in the media, etc., etc. It's all about entrepreneurship. Yet when you opened, yes, you're obviously passionate about it because that's what you do. That's what your company stands for. That's what you're, where you've created so much success, and kudos to you. Yet if we were to take a step back and actually look at entrepreneurship, it's not all that sexy, because when you step out of the safety of a job to go and start a business, you really are stepping onto the ledge. What would your response be to what's currently happening, I think, around excessive sexing up of entrepreneurship and maybe not enough clear and clarity thinking around it?
Chris, you've hit the nail on the head. A year ago, I wrote an article, I can't remember the title. I think it was called Entrepreneurship Needs to Come with a Caution. You may not survive.
A warning label.
Yeah, a warning label. You may not survive. Because I think, too, I agree with you 100%. It's been made. It's almost the pendulum has swung too far to the other side. And what's happened, not just here, by the way, it's across Africa, where entrepreneurship is seen as just add water and you'll become successful. And we saw this in the early days with people who said, I've got a CC, therefore I've got a business. I registered a CC, therefore I've got a business.
Yes.
And people not understanding that the business is far more than just registering it, and far more than your first success, because post your first success, you have to have another one and another one. And in fact, you have to keep on, you know, going through trial and tribulation to keep succeeding and going through your failures and succeeding again. So I agree with you 100% that entrepreneurship, I think, is oversold, is too easy, and that it's and people think that it's going to be a very quick solution to becoming wealthy. The international stats show that it takes around 5 years and 2 months to become profitable on average. And when I say profitable, I just want to make clear what that means. Very often when we talk about profitable businesses, we don't take into consideration our real market value salaries, because when we start up our businesses, we're not paying ourselves a market-related salary. We certainly aren't paying many of our staff a market-related salary.
Quite.
So when you normalize that, okay, in other words, if you had to sell that or get somebody else to run your business, the business goes from, in inverted commas, a profit to a loss. Mm. So when I'm talking about taking 5.2 years to become profitable, I'm talking about a normalized profit where you're paying market-related salaries and overheads. So I think people need to understand it takes time. And we have a lot of young people who think it's just, it's very, very, it's a quick process. The other important thing to add to that is this notion of hard is not wrong. Now, let me just explain what that means. It's very often people think that because it's hard, I'm not in tune with this, and so it's the wrong thing. And they go Control-Alt-Delete, and they start again. And then that's also hard. And obviously, I'm not in tune with this. And then in the beginning, they were talking about their passion and how passionate they were about X business. And then it becomes hard. And now they've got a new passion. Now this is their passion. And then that was hard. And they start again.
Yeah.
And I see many people doing this Control-Alt-Delete. And they never build any kind of depth in their business and go through the hard to the other side. Because once you get through the hard, it becomes easier. Okay. So that's also related to this whole concept about whether entrepreneurship is sexy. It's too sexy, and it's and it's hard.
Well, I'm so glad you say that, because this is it. Speaking and interviewing people like yourself, other people that have sat in the same chair, until they've actually experienced almost a cataclysmic smack, they haven't mastered business. And it's very interesting, because as Suzanne was sharing, here in her mid-40s, suddenly bang, out of side field, here comes this massive tsunami, if you will, which wipes you off your feet, and you think to yourself, goodness gracious, where did that come from? And in your 40s, that's quite hectic. But what it does do is it makes you so much more aware of what matters. And you know, it's very interesting. I mean, I'd love to know what your thoughts are around the purpose of business is to serve, and that your business really is about serving others, obviously in a profitable way. Because there's quite a lot of material put out around that. Is it around purely serving, or is it so much more?
Oh. Tough question. I speak about a thing called the dual directive of being in business. The one directive as an entrepreneur is to, I call it to add value. It might be just another version of to serve, but to add value to a client. So you spend a huge amount of your time thinking about how do I add value to my client or clients or different markets, and that's a huge focus. The other side of the coin is the second directive is to serve yourself. In other words, that you need to be in a position where you can pay yourself. And too often I see the entrepreneurs that fail in the medium term have spent their life, many years, only focused on one side of that coin, which is just to serve the client, but not making a profit. And not believing that they deserve to make a profit and pay themselves. And it is the balance of that. And I do understand that in the beginning it's more about the client, but you have to get to a point where you believe you deserve to make a profit, and you do that by serving the client, by adding value to them. It's only in the combination that you can last the distance.
Well, what a fantastic answer. I just love that, the duality thinking. And you're so right. And actually, it's very interesting when we've interacted with some business owners where they are so focused on the client that actually the love for the business begins to wane. Because really, what's in it for me?
Well, you become very resentful of something that you were extremely passionate about. But if you're not getting anything back yourself, if you're not having anything invested back in you from the business, the resentment has got to kick in, because you're missing out on so many things that you were perhaps doing previously prior to starting this business. And, you know, you start getting to a position where you think, well, why am I doing this anyway?
You know, there's an interesting piece of research out of the UK which showed that on average the entrepreneur will earn less than their corporate counterpart over a period of their career. They will, by a long margin, because they will have underpaid themselves for so long that even in an exponential view where you are successful in the long run, if you add up the cumulative value of all the salaries, versus all the salary sacrifices that you had in the early years, on average you'll come worse off, which comes back to the sexiness of this thing. Now, I'm not talking down entrepreneurship. I think what I'm talking about is, let's be sober about this.
Thank you.
Not everyone is going to make gazillions. And some of us are going to battle through, and some of us are going to fail. In fact, most of us are going to fail. But I think the thing that I don't know you at all, but I know that you would feel this way, is that there's the intangible payment, which is the journey. What happens when you become an entrepreneur? The people you meet, how you view yourself, how you see yourself in the world, you understanding your limits and where you thought they were, and in fact where they are. And that whole self-discovery and that journey is also part of the payment. So even though the financial reward might not be equivalent to your corporate counterpart, there are other things that compensate for that in your journey.
One of the things I found as well is that having run very, very successful businesses and having run one very, very big one and owned and built it up, I know how to do it. So it's a case of, once again, learning from the mistake and looking at where I was going and what I was doing, and knowing that if you can put a business into place that turns over R500 million in 10 years, you can learn to find the next business that's going to do that. And I think that's one of the very, very hard things, is that when you have a huge failure, it does knock your confidence. Mm-hmm. It does change how you think about certain things. I love making money in business. Mm-hmm. I love the way how I was terrible at maths in school. Mm-hmm. I didn't finish high school, but even if I had have done, maths was not going to be on my matric agenda. I just wasn't going to pass. But when I got into business, when I was around 27, I suddenly worked out what maths meant. Mm-hmm. Because there wasn't an X and an A and a B and a C and some Y's and all these very boring letters that I couldn't relate to. There were actual tangible things that were bits of stock or manufacturing, or I made jewelry, I made chocolates, I sold Tupperware, I did everything. And it was such an incredible thing to suddenly realize, oh, hang on, I get it. I know how that works. And I love seeing how money works in business. It's not the love of money, it's the love of how money works. And I really took a dent in my confidence for 18 months to 2 years. And we actually sat with Dr. DeMartini a few weeks ago, and he just said something to me that it just clicked. And it was around, you know, sometimes you ignore your highest values, you ignore what makes you tick, you look at the emotional side of it, and you then bring in the resentment because you're not doing what you really love. And I just thought, I get it, I like it. I'm allowed to say I like, just because I lost a lot of money, doesn't mean to say that I can't say I love how money works still. I just love it to all come back now.
And it shall.
It is.
Alon.
Yeah.
To pick up on the youth, a young person is listening to this interview. They hear the passion, yet tempered with sobriety, that you bring to the table. And they become inspired. And they say, well, look, I still want to give business a go. Mm-hmm. I want to get out there. And yes, I understand I might fail, but I'm also going to back myself and I'm going to go along this journey. Having the experience that you have, how would you advise them to begin? What are the baby steps?
Okay, Chris, before I go into the baby steps, we've used the word passion many times tonight, and I just want to give you my view on passion first. Any book you read on entrepreneurship will talk about passion. Okay, the problem that I see is every time I meet somebody, an entrepreneur, and I ask them what they're passionate about, they just retrofit what they do into what they're passionate about. So if they're in the cell phone industry, I'm passionate about cell phones. If I'm in the advertising industry, I'm passionate about advertising. I have a friend who has a listed company in the waste disposal business. I can't imagine him passionate about rubbish. He's not passionate about rubbish. And in Rescorp, I met a guy the other day who's got a funeral home, and asked him what he's passionate about. He said, dead people. Now, that's not true. We all know that's not true. What I've found is the successful entrepreneurs, yes, they are passionate, but what they have done really well is linked their real, authentic passion into what they do. So that you don't have to be passionate about dead people to be in the funeral industry. You don't have to be passionate about rubbish to be in the waste disposal industry. But what they do really well is they're very, very honest about what they're passionate about, and have found a way to authentically link their passion to what they do. So that's just my word on passion. Coming back to your question around if I was young and wanted to start, I think the first thing is CERTE, CERTE, compelling economic right to exist. That needs to be the first and foremost thing that you get right. And 99% of entrepreneurs that start out do not get that right. What is your compelling, very important word, economic right to exist? In other words, why should somebody buy from me? And if they do buy from me, how is it that 100 Rand becomes 200 Rand instead of 80 Rand? What is compelling about what am I doing? What I'm doing? How have I differentiated myself? Have I thought through how I compete in the market? And it still astounds me that people start businesses without a compelling economic right to exist. And a simple question that I ask is, how does the money flow in the business? How does I spend 100 rand with you, tell me what drops out the bottom, and they cannot tell you. Number two, I ask, why should I buy from you? What makes you special? They can't answer that except for some sort of BS answer that it's because they are more creative, or that they provide exceptional personal service to their client. These are, or they're cheaper. These are not sustainable differentiators. So they have to come up with a compelling economic right to exist in the long run. Once they get that right, then they can build a business on top of that.
That's actually quite a statement, and it is so true, because so often you hear young people talking about, or on these tweet chats and the business chats, and they're all worrying, what's your value proposition? And, I provide excellent service, and you're going to get all those things over and over and over again. And I like the way that you say there, the compelling economic right to exist, because so many entrepreneurs actually don't do that. We're going to be back with Alan Rose just now. If you have any tweets or any questions, you can tweet us on @mix938fm, or you can send us an SMS on 41348.
Do you remember your first bicycle? And immediately you're 9 again. You're running around with your friends. You're racing all over the place. You're going to the shop for your mom, putting a playing card in the spokes to make it sound like a motorbike. And you can remember the smells and the sounds and the sights of your youth. And I did that with 6 words. Your average 30-second commercial contains 75 words. Harness the power of Theatre of the Mind for your business. Advertise on Mix FM.
All hit radio. MixFM.co.za.
Who let the dogs out?
Well, the party was nice, the party was pumping.
Hey, yeah.
And everybody having a ball. The fellas start the name calling, and the girls respond to the call. I have a full one shout out.
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
I see the young people at a ball, cause Billy Bonders get out. Get back, Gruffy, bash Gruffy. Get back, you play invest in mongrel. Myself, I'm man, no get angry.
Hey, yeah,
to where the girls calling them canine. Hey, but they tell me, hey, man, start up the party.
Who
put a woman in front and a man behind? I heard a woman shout out.
Who let the dogs out?
Yes, got in if he don't have a bone.
Oh, doggy, hold your phone. Oh, no, doggy, hold this.
A doggy is not in if he don't. Bash Gruffy, get back, you play invest in mongrel.
Well, if I am a dog, the party is on. I gotta get my groove, got my mind, I'm gone. Do you see the race coming from my eye? Walking through the place, the Digimon is breaking them down. Me and my white socks, short, dealing, gassy color. Any caliber, do I think I knew, that's why they call me Pitbull. Cause I'm the man of the land, with it to me, that's a ooh.
So that was Baha Men with Who Let the Dogs Out. I thought we'd just have a little bit of a hot dog connotation there. And I just want to say thank you for some SMSs and tweets coming in. One of the SMSs that came in was Alan Gerdat saying, thank you so much for your wise words, and if there was ever a time that I needed to hear it, it was now. But if I may ask, what is the motto that you live by? And that's from Michelle Nordia.
Michelle, I live by think it, write it down, and make it reality. And where that comes from is that everyone, you know, thinks about ideas. But as soon as you write it down, you bring it from the ether, you bring it from the, let's call it the spiritual, into the physical. And it's not good enough then to bring it into physical. Then you have to take the action to actually implement that and bring it into a three-dimensional reality. And so for me, everything is about thinking it. Right then, the first thing I do is then write it down. I write down copious notes and then tick off to bring it into reality. And my staff actually go crazy when I get any time alone, because or read a new book or anything that precipitates a thought, because the following day, you know, okay, we're implementing this new thing. This is the new thing. And it, for me, it's all about execution, about executing on that idea.
Sometimes I do wish that radio had visual capabilities, because I'm just grinning from ear to ear. And I must tell you, what makes it even more fascinating is that as he walked in, he grabbed his pen with the left hand. Yeah. And it was just like, hello.
So that's three of us
that's
again.
That's three of us it. All sitting in the studio tonight. And I love it, because that's exactly what it is. It's taking an idea and writing it. And I'm so glad you used the word write. Mm. Because that's the not sit there and type, but actually grab a pen and write. Yes, I love it. I love it. I love it. Now
I've got an iPad that is a toy. Mm. It is for doing our social media and for helping me relax in the evenings. I just play cards or I'm scrolling on the internet. But I can't get used to this typing down notes. There's no connection.
No connection.
Once you've typed them, they're actually out of sight, out of mind. But it's that writing them that's so important. And when we're teaching and giving our seminars, and we say to people, okay, you know, sorry, iPhones, iPads, got to go away. Pens. Mm. And they look at you like you are from out of space. Mm. For sure.
Now, at the beginning of the show, you shared with us your story when you were quite a bit younger. Mm-hmm. I'd like to bring us right fast forward to now. Mm-hmm. What goes through your head when you look at the world of entrepreneurship now? What are you seeing? What are the latest trends? Where are you seeing opportunities developing at the moment? And the reason I'm saying this is, again, we have a young, hungry audience. Let them feed off what you are seeing. You're a global traveler. You're at the cutting edge of what's going on. Share what you are seeing, what's happening right now, please.
For me, there are two answers to that. And I'm going to use my mentor's words from 20 years ago to answer the first. Is do not be obsessed about what is cutting edge. Be obsessed about being the best in whatever you do, because you can make money from anything if you are just 1% better than anyone else. You can make money from air, you can make money from plastic. There are people making money from buttons, and there's still people making millions today if they are the best at it. So I don't have this view that there is one thing, that one big trend that's going to make you the money. And by the way, as soon as if I know what the trend is, there are people far smarter than me that already are way ahead of me already. So it's already too late. It's about trying to be the best in whatever you do. The second answer to that is Africa. I travel Africa quite a bit. It's an incredibly interesting place. It's exciting, and it's still hard to do business. And where it's hard to do business, there's a massive opportunity. And I think as people who live in Africa, we already have a leg up in this race to leverage the growth in the African market. So for me, that's particularly interesting for us. I've just been this year I've been to Nigeria, I've been to Morocco, I'm off to Rwanda, we've been to Uganda, Gabon, Tanzania, Zambia, Botswana, and the list goes on. There's opportunity everywhere. But the biggest opportunity is right in front of you in the mirror.
Oh, how fantastic.
I love that. That's absolutely incredible. In fact, we've got a lovely SMS in now from Brandon, who's saying that he is 33 and looking at a career change. He said, is it ever too late to make the career change or to get involved in something that you love and that I'm passionate about and I'm learning about? I mean, he's actually taken the first step, which is really great. He's doing some courses in what it is he wants to do. Mm-hmm. But he's saying at 33, and oh my goodness, is he making
so
me feel old? And he says,
but he's still,
are you
still
too
so
old?
Young. At 33, does he feel that he's too old? No, he's so young. I started Race Corp at 34. And I left vehicle security industry, you've mentioned my wife is in the studio. 3 months before I got married, I resigned to become poor again because I hated what I was doing. And her father came to me and said, how are you going to keep my daughter in the manner she's become accustomed to? And I said, Joe, I have no idea. And he said, oh, okay, just asking. But I made a conscious decision at 34. Just start again.
Wonderful.
Okay. So 33 is still young.
Still young. There we go. So, Brandon, I hope that answers your question. And carry on with the courses and start doing something that you really like. I mean, we're not going to overuse the passionate word, but that's the thing. And if it is something that you've become passionate about, it, we always say that you can always monetize your passion. Alan said you can make money out of air. You can make money out of buttons. You can make money out of anything if you do it the right way.
Given your network, you will be interacting extensively with other successful and dynamic entrepreneurs. Mm. Do you notice certain common habits or traits that these successful people display? And if so, what are these?
You know, there are many books written on entrepreneurs, but when you look at what they call the psychological typology of an entrepreneur, there's actually no such thing as an entrepreneur. What that means is that you cannot assemble a whole bunch of character traits and say, if you've got A, B, C, D, E, and F, therefore you are an entrepreneur. There are characteristics that give you a higher probability, such as flexibility, father issues, the perseverance. No, father issues is a real one. Everyone's laughing. Two psychologists, Collins and Moore, show that unequivocally, if you've got father issues and an overdoting mother, you're far more likely to become a successful entrepreneur. So there are many characteristics. But for me, why I'm always loath to answer it in that way is because many people who are listening feel that there's a sense that there's a thing called an entrepreneur. And in fact, my view is that there isn't. Okay, and let me tell you where this comes from. About 8 years ago, out of the US, a piece of research showed that the most successful first-time entrepreneurs were 60 years and older. Now, that breaks the question, are they born or are they made?
Absolutely.
Because if you're 55, you're working at IBM for 30 years, you weren't born an entrepreneur, you certainly weren't made an entrepreneur, and then you became one. So, did you all of a sudden develop these characteristics? So, for me, that started making me think very differently about the question. And for me, there are five things that have to be in place. There are five elements that need to be in place in order for an entrepreneur to precipitate from being a nascent entrepreneur. In other words, I've just got an idea, like Brandon, who's 33 and thinking about it, to a trading entrepreneur. The first is that every successful entrepreneur has either seen an opportunity or crisis has happened in their life. There is not one entrepreneurial story without either side of that coin or both, that they see an opportunity or there's a crisis. Number two, they have to have a tolerance for pain. As entrepreneurs, every day we're told we're too old, we're too young, we're too black, we're too white, we're too tall, we're too short. Every day we're told something negative. And it's the resilience through that. In other words, that we don't take that. If you look at the business when you start and you go out to market and people tell you this thing that it's not going to work, and you retract into your shell, you never ever become that entrepreneur because we never get it right the first time. So tolerance for pain is important. The third is tolerance for risk. And risk is a bell curve. So in your early 20s, you've got much higher tolerance for risk as you would in your 60s. your children are out of home, etc., higher tolerance for risk. So if an opportunity presented to you in your 20s, you're far more likely to take that up than if you're in your 40s. Like me, I've got a bond on my house, two kids in private school, I've got responsibilities.
Tolerance for pain.
Tolerance for pain. So there's opportunity, tolerance for risk, tolerance for pain. The fourth one is your belief in your ability to muster resources. And I use the word belief very, very importantly. So it's not your ability to muster resources, but your belief that you can muster those resources. Many of the entrepreneurial stories you will hear were, if I knew then what I know now, I wouldn't have started the business. You know, you've heard that many, many times.
Plenty.
Now, what's that about? That's about these entrepreneurs at the time believing that they can put this together. There's the opportunity. I'm going to get that guy and this money, and I'm going to put it all together, and I'm going to get these people and that market, and they're going to buy. And, of course, it doesn't happen that way. And then they say, well, then I'm going to try it this way and that way. And they work it out. They figure it out. But it's that deep belief that they can put it together and get through it that makes them succeed.
Fantastic.
And then the final one is your ability to learn and iterate. And that is that you can learn from and read the feedback and iterate and apply to your business.
That I love. And it actually often makes me think about these motivational quotes or pieces that you see from very successful entrepreneurs. And one of my favorite ones that's always on Facebook is Richard Branson saying, you know, it doesn't matter if you can't do something when somebody asks you to do it for them. Just say yes and learn.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. You know, it's a lot of people find the entrepreneurial journey is very challenging because they want perfection before they start. And one of the most successful businesses and wealthy businesses in the world releases their product year after year after year and then releases a million patches to fix it. Mm-hmm. And most of us with PCs know exactly who I'm talking about.
Right, and on that bombshell, you have given so generously of your time tonight, and I know that the audience will be just lapping up what you have shared with them, because there's real good practical nuggets in it. Now, you have built a fantastic company, and hats off to you.
Thank
for
you.
Doing that. As the show begins to close out, please share with our audience what it is that you do, how they interact with you, because one thing we do know is that whoever does interact with you is certainly in good hands.
Thanks, Chris, for the opportunity. Two things I want to talk about is Raise Corp itself and our various programs, our Partner Elite program, our Rise program, where you as an entrepreneur can come, apply, go through a selection process and become part of one of our programs, where we will provide you with physical infrastructure, we will provide you with bookkeepers, learning, we're accredited to the CHE Council for Education, we will provide you with five different types of guides, a strategy guide, a finance guide, a marketing guide, a sales guide and a personal development guide. A team of people will work with you. We will give you market access both into our 500 companies that we work with in Raise Corp right now, into supply chains and internationally. And then, of course, we do not provide finance, but access to finance, and that is at a later stage, and being part of a community. So that's sort of our incubation, or what we call our Prosperation program. But I'd also like to talk about something that I'm doing on the 27th of September, which is called Shift Questions. It's a one-day workshop. It's being held at the Focus Rooms. You can go on to shiftquestions.co.za and book. It's a one-day where if you are in a place where you don't know how to move, you've been trying to get out of this rut, I will spend a day with the audience asking you questions that will shift your paradigm. And you can go on there at 17:50 for the day, and we work through a workbook, and by the end of the day, I guarantee you will have 30, 40, 50 different actions that you would never have thought of before you came through.
Absolutely fantastic, fantastic.
Now, sorry, I've just got one last SMS question snuck in there. What are you reading at the moment?
Jeez, I've just read a book called The Second Bounce of the Ball by Sir Ronald Cohen, who was the founder of Apex. There's a big VC company out of the UK that became absolutely huge. And it just came to me at the right time. I couldn't put that book down. It was, you know, sometimes a book comes to you at the right time, and that's what I've just finished reading. I haven't picked up the next one.
Well, there you have it. Alan Reyes of Reyes Corp, thank you so much. It has really been a fascinating hour. How it's flown. I mean, I'm looking at there, I'm thinking, goodness me, I wish we could actually eat into the time of the guys that are following us, but that wouldn't be civil. But how fantastic to have you in studio. And once again, really hats off for the incredible work that you and your company have done locally around entrepreneurs, building entrepreneurs in a very sensible, sober, ecological way. Huge respect.
Well, and it has been lovely, Alan, thank you so much, and I'm sure we're going to be asking you to come back and share a little bit more after you've done your shift questions. And I have put a tweet out, so if you want some more information on Alan's one-day workshop, it is shiftquestions.co.za.
Correct.
Lovely. Now, next week we have got Hank van Laar in from the PSA Group.
Absolutely. And we're talking procurement, and that's something that you might be scratching your head and thinking procurement. Yeah, often the Cinderella business unit of the large corporate, but my goodness me, there is so much more to it. And Hank and Debbie van Laar run a company called the PSA Group, and they will be in studio with us next week sharing their journey, both international and local, around procurement and what it takes and how they have built just the most beautiful company.
And how procurement is actually quite essential for small businesses too. We think that it's something that is the realm of big business and corporates, but how actually localizing your spend and doing a bit of research and having some form of procurement policy in small business can help save you a tremendous amount of money.
Now, as always, we will podcast tonight's show, and I know that you will want to listen to the wisdom of Alan again, and you'll want to share it with other people. So the website address is thesuccessshow.podbean.com. That's where we will podcast tonight's show, and please re-listen to it again and again and again. There were just the most fantastic jewels of wisdom shared tonight, and share it with your friends and encourage other people to interact and to attend the event that was discussed this evening.
You've been listening to The Success Show on Mix 93.8 FM with Chris and Suzanne Stiles.
Success begins in the 6 inches between your ears. If you want more money, more time, more happiness, and more love in your life, then listen to The Success Show with Chris and Suzanne Stiles every Tuesday night at 7:15.
The home of hits.